Major Notley, Reel 4. Can you remember when it was exactly that you were doing this work at Murray?
Yes, pretty well April, May, about April, May, 1937.
And at that time, was the Wylie of Swat being particularly awkward or...?
Well, the Fakira Leapy, I think, was the most difficult one. The one that was known as the Vicar, that was his cable.
Do you remember what he was up to at the time, what he was doing?
General sort of tagging faults and tagging other circles, I think. I think he had rather hurled over other tribes. I don't think that he had any particular tribe. I really don't know a lot about it.
He wasn't a tribal chief, was he?
No.
Fakir is a holy man, isn't he?
Yes. He had a grip on the blood marshes.
Have you any idea at all of what sort of strength we're talking about in terms of active enemy that time on the northwest frontier?
Sorry, no. I do know that
this was really by making use of the ground, wasn't it, and their own skills. Yes.
There was a very interesting book written by a chap called Skeen, I think. It was called Passing It On. And this was how you conducted yourself in one of these operations. Put out pickets and so on. And that is a classic book. It's happened to that now, although anybody understands what happened, I don't know.
Did you actually go up to the frontier?
Unfortunately, no. I'd love to have done. I went into the frontier province with the chief of staff, who took an interest in me, being one of the lone little southern people, a nice chap. And we went for on the governor, which was Cunningham. I think he was probably a brother of the general. But I'm not certain. Of course, the general had a brother who was an enemy.
That's right.
I'm not sure whether it was Lee Cummings or who was related. Of course, there's a lovely story about the general, which you probably know, about General Cunningham and the Admiral. Do you know that story? Well, Admiral Cunningham was knighted, and he was knighted for the second time. And his brother sent him a signal, once a night is quite all right, but twice a night they are down. No, I can't really tell you more. I'd love to be on the front end, I never walked on.
How did the coded messages reach you? Did they come to you by courier in your hotel room, or did they come to you by telephone or by other means?
I think they were brought to me by a courier. It wasn't very far from headquarters. There was always somebody on duty.
How big was the headquarters at Murray? What?
Well, huge. The headquarters of Northern Command was a very big organisation. One by General Hartley. And the intelligence set up for us is very nice chap. His name I just mentioned, McNamara, who was in the army, and the G2 intelligence was a sapper, some sort of his name was now. And there was this very nice brigadier who was the chief of staff.
And you were working for McNamara as chief of intelligence?
I was working for him, yes, I was.
And that was a 6-month attachment to Murray, and
yes,
that was an extra regimental duty.
Went on about 6 months.
Did you have any other duties away from the battalion while you were in India?
No, only to go on courses. I went on one at Patsmari, which I've already told you about, with a tiger game. And that was on small arms. And I went on a gas course at. forget where it was, but there was a gas called Kasali, which was in the mountain.
Do you remember what happened at that course? What did you do then?
Well, it was all very new, because the army officer had me up and said, how to get on or something, and I said, well, sir, I've got to have a brass neck and pretty rough, which is what they asked. And you don't put gas across to troops in India, it's pretty unpleasant anyway, but in that sort of climate, very unpleasant. So there was a little smoke from the evening, so I did this. But I did well on the course, apparently. I had a good accommodation for being able to connect and so on. So, gas officer.
Were you able to set up a gas hut for training purposes?
Oh, yes, we had all the decontamination business and that sort of thing. Yes, oh, yes, they gave me what they could, but it wasn't a very popular appointment.
In your opinion, was the respirator we had at that time effective as a defence against gas?
I think probably not.
Why was that? Was it because the seal was inadequate or?
The seal, and it wasn't the sort of box that we had now. It was the one that we carried in a haversack.
Yes.
Which people carried around starting with the war, not children, they had a different magic, but this was an awful thing in the haversack. And Gary sits in around in India, particularly in hot weather, it was much fun. No, I don't think it was any good.
Wearing it must have been very, very unpleasant in hot weather.
You couldn't see out of the thing anyway. That's the special stuff you put on,
yes,
on the lenses, so they didn't look very efficient.
No, I would imagine that you'd get a lot of condensation once you exerted yourself. Yes. What sort of gas were they discussing when you went on the course? Do you know which gases were mentioned?
Positive and oxygen.
Yes.
One may be positive.
Did they mention mustard?
Mustard, yes. I was interested because I had an uncle who was in
The uncle who was in the Devons?
No, this was an uncle who married my aunt, who was in Yorkshire. And he was gassed and blinded, and she nursed him and married him with some Dunstans. And the story goes that he never saw her, except once when they were bathing in the sea. And the light on a certain position, he said, I can see you, Molly. And I'm a bit like what I think you are. Disappointing. But they're both dead now.
When you were on the gas course, did they discuss what they thought the possibilities were of gas being used in an armed conflict?
I think they must have done that. And maybe have forgotten.
Because around about this time, the Italians were using gas in Ethiopia, weren't they?
Yes.
Well, they in that case, they'd stopped using gas because they'd more or less got a grip of it. But they had used gas quite freely. Yes. And did you know about that at the time?
Well, I don't remember exactly what it was. No, it was 37 or 38. I can't really remember. But it was certainly 34, I think it must have been 39, probably. We knew what was going on.
So your duties, you were a weapon training officer, which meant arranging range practice and
so on. Zeroing rifles, which is quite important, and any sort of technical details.
And you were also a gas officer?
Gas officer, yes.
And does this mean you were still part of HQ Company?
Oh no, I was in a company as well. I was in B Company, which was the one that I was taking the bike, which fairly close to the bazaar in Burwood Barracks.
Yes.
Morris Road, the hall.
And you were 2IC of that company?
No, I was only a platoon commander.
The platoon commander. What strength was your platoon in India? Was it?
We were up to strength 4. Yes. Did
you undergo the same process of working under the sergeant when you first arrived, or did you take command immediately?
I think they were always. You see, the two battalions are so different.
How are they different?
Well, can I tell you a little story? We had an adjutant called Pentree, George Pentree, who was a big character. And he would never ever serve in the 2nd Battalion. He served out in India for about 13 years, never came home. And he regarded the 2nd Battalion as absolute dirt. And that was sort of feeling that he put in. I don't think we all agreed with it, because everybody agreed with the 2nd Battalion. Well, how far that went with the soldier, I don't know. I think it was much less so. But the officer's mess was distinctly, I say, it was ruled by the agent, but he was a character. I think we had to laugh a bit, but he was quite down. He was a character, and he was a character. He couldn't do this to tell.
Do you know why he had such a strong feeling about the 2nd Battalion?
I think it was probably a friendly rivalry. Mm. And I wouldn't mind betting that. And yes, and I know it went on now. Very much so. Have you heard of a chap called Peter C. Jones, who's a brigadier who lives down the road?
No, I didn't think so.
Well, he went out to join the 1st Battalion. Saw the CEO, had a very good report when he came out from the 2nd Battalion, whichever way around it was. And one of them said, "Won't you tell me, Count says nothing." You start again, you know.
So you started again with your sergeant in
yeah,
India.
Yeah, I had a different one, of course, yes. A very good one called Grant, an interesting character, he had one eye. And the story there was he and a chap called Eric Germain Buller, who was CEO of DEFA at the time, letting off fireworks. Eric Germain Buller let off fireworks, which blew his chap's eye out. And despite that, Grant called his first son Grant called his first child Eric Germain Buller.
Bearing that in mind, that there was such a feeling between the two battalions, did you find that things in the 1st Battalion were done in a radically different way to the way in which they were done in the 2nd Battalion?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, things were so far ahead in sort of thinking of mobilisation schemes and things in the 2nd. The 1st was still nothing long in the old Indian style, and war didn't hit India, of course.
Well, the requirements in India were different, weren't they? Yes. Because the primary role in India was colonial policing. And
they had
internal security. Yes. Whereas in Britain, the primary role was preparation for European warfare.
Yes.
So. Can you remember what you were doing when the war broke out?
In September 1939, I had my shooting accident in March. I was in Burma Barracks, I think, as a platoon commander in company.
Did the outbreak of war come as a surprise?
Not really. I think we were, we kept abreast of it.
What was the response to the outbreak of war? Was there any immediate action that had to be taken?
Many interesting things happened. Yes, in India, we had anybody who had the slightest connection with the Germans and the Italians had to be put in, I don't know what you call them, some sort of a camp. It was our barracks, and we had to take these people in.
Burgred barracks.
Well, it wasn't Burgred Barracks, no. We couldn't have done it there. But I was then, I think, probably a native barracks. And we had to take these people in. We had a Buddhist monk who was German. anybody been working for Siemens and so on. And the monk had no teeth, I mean, it couldn't be any less dangerous. But he had to be put in this, I forget what they did. Had wire around the place, and they had interviews going on. They were allowed to see members of their family and one at the time, and had to supervise those.
Effectively, it sounds like you become a jailer.
Well, one was, really, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you actually have to go out and arrest them, or was that done by somebody else?
No, that was
done. Have you got any idea of the numbers, roughly speaking?
Well, we were full up, I know. Throughout India, it was incredible. You have to go on everywhere in India, really.
Did they behave themselves once they'd been interned?
Yes.
You had no trouble with them?
I think they all tried to get their friends in, but they weren't allowed to, you know, only one at a time. You had to be verified if you came in. You had to be present.
Did any of them attempt to escape?
No, not I.
Do you think that any of them might have constituted a threat?
I should have thought some technician might have gone and opened up a dam somewhere. I should think it was possible.
Possibility of sabotage?
Some sort of sabotage they might have done. Mm.
Was there ever any hint that they might have had connections with the Indian nationalists?
They were thought of at that time, Indian National Army. No. Mm.
Did anything else happen as a result of the outbreak of war? Any change in normal duties or training or procedures?
Yes, I think we all had to try and be more imaginative in all our training. And it was difficult. I know the mortars were introduced in, and I was saying they were made of wood and carried them around, but at least we had something that was empty.
Was this 3-inch mortar?
We had MT. Yes. Lorries. And the Indian Army was very, very interesting because they were horse lorries. We had the 19th Lancers with us, and every man had to learn to drive. That was quite too dangerous. Of course, the Indian lorries were made of wood lorries, and they were highly painted. And I remember seeing this happen. There was a lorry which chap was driving, he was learning to drive, and the telegraph poles had stairs that went down parallel to a road. And this lorry, I saw it, had gone right up the wire, so that it was balanced on the wire, and in front of it was a fakir hanging up on it by his hands. It was an extraordinary sight. But I actually saw that. We had a lot of accidents, obviously. But we had a very good regiment,
Well, they were converted to transport.
Yeah, they were converted to tanks or something like that.
When you mentioned the mortars, were these wooden mortars, were they supposed to be 3-inch mortars or 2-inch?
3-inch.
So this was the...
Yes. I don't remember whether we had a 2-inch, but I certainly had a 2-inch mortar, I think. When I came back to India, which I could talk about later, and we had 2-inch mortars, I don't remember whether we had them in India. I can't remember.
Did you have any large-scale exercises or manoeuvres to work you up towards higher intensity conflict?
Not when I was there. I left India in April 41, and the battalion was then going to Iraq and Haifa.
But you left them just before they went to Iraq?
I did, with some others, yes. Four or three others, yes.
What was the reason that you came back to England?
Well, I think that they hadn't really got jobs for us in Italian, and therefore we were surplus. And we were sent back, we felt rather glad that it helped train me, so to an army.
Of course, at that time we were rather short of trained officers in England.
We were very sent back to do that. Yeah. I found myself in a very dangerous position in St Albans, all places, and it was
How did you get back?
Well, I came back in the Cape Town Castle, travel with them. We went round the Cape, of course, and there was a frightful storm off a place called Griekenland in East Africa. And the ship was, the whole thing, you could put your foot on the side and you could feel the ship bending. And she was very comfortable, a huge ship, and you know, there weren't that many of us. I think they had on board the crew of the Queen Mary, something bigger than that. But we all had a very comfortable time. We had to do some kind of work.
What sort of work?
Well, we had to do practice self-walls, that sort of thing, and looking at stars, shooting, and I've heard of the story about this, shooting at balloons with Ross rifles, which were kept in the funnel. She was a motor ship. And there was a very elderly officer on board called Mockler, who was Somerset, and he really was retiring, I think. And his first shot went through the captain's lifeboat.
Now, the Ross was a Canadian rifle, wasn't it?
Yes.
How did it compare to our standard Lee Enfield?
Well, it was nothing compared to the other Lee Enfields or the Irish concern ever. And I never knew any others. I was convinced that the field SMME, which I knew that was, was a good rifle.
And the Ross couldn't compare with that?
I dare say it did, but I never. You know, I never had much to do with it.
Well, did you have any alarms on the way back?
Yes. A really interesting story, and it is absolutely true. We had to man French machine guns.
What, Hotchkiss?
Yes.
Maybe. With the tray?
Yes. Yes. Either side of the funnel.
Yes.
The captain of the bridge and the chaplain, Allnut, and I were coming up the flag there. And we didn't know much about aircraft. And some of them turned up. And we said, we always call the captain before you open fire. And this thing came along. We called Captain Ford. We said, yes, have a go, you see. So we opened up on this Sunderland Fosters with a tray jet. We only had about 14 miles in the thing. And you should have seen the signals that came out. Spark came out and fire. Because the thing hadn't given them there, you see. So if we had hit it, I don't think we'd have been too much to blame. But we didn't really know. Aircraft recognition, we should have been told much more about it.
Had you done anything on that while you were in India?
I guess you should have much about it. Mm. 5 days or so.
Did you have any submarine alerts on the voyage?
Definitely. I think we were probably too fast.
Yeah.
So it was a zigzag, it was a cool ship. Quite fast.
So you got back to the Clyde. What impression did England make on you?
Well, I was so interested because we thought, and having read the papers, the whole of England was bombed, you see. And of course, Clyde was, and that was terrible. And Plymouth was bad. And I loved Liverpool. But, you know, when I got home, which was Saunders got in country, I was amazed how much the country hadn't been bombed, that they hadn't bothered about, which is very pleasant. But we only saw the papers and everything like that, provinces and so on.
What about the sort of mood in the country, its psychological state? What did you make of that?
Terrific. I thought they were marvellous. Yes. I mean, I went on a course, and I think they said, you know, firefighting course, and I learned about 2 pumps and how to work the fire tender as well.
Where was that? Down in.
That was an extraordinary place. It was Bransford, up in Yorkshire, Bransford, or Brampton, that's called Brampton. I think it was in Northumberland.
Was
that? Come to Brampton. Brampton Castle was designed for the courses in those days. They were very short courses. We learned a bit now. And we had a Dutchman. We all slept in dormitories. He was anxious to get up in the night. He couldn't quite make out the difference between he wanted to pee or fart. He used to jump up and he'd suddenly produce a pot or something on his bed and he'd shout fart. Silly stories.
Now you were saying you were in St Albans.
Yes.
Is that the first place you went to on duty when you got back to England?
Yeah, I went home for a short time.
Yes. That would have been disembarkation leave, would it?
Yes.
Would that be Bodmin?
Bodmin.
Yes. And you got sent to Clacton?
Yes.
Sorry, St Albans. Was it St Albans first and Clacton afterwards?
Clacton, yes. We were part of the
43rd Division.
Yes.
Yeah. So 4th Battalion was in St Albans. What was their role when you joined them?
In St Albans?
Yes. Were they a training battalion primarily?
Yes,
or,
yes, we were supposed to be training, but precious little we could do in St Albans. I mean, they were just billeted in different houses. Mm. I can't remember doing very much training there.
What about the battalion itself? Was it establishment strength?
Yes, I think so. Mm. We had a chap called Max Harrowing, who was CO, and the famous adjutant had come back and treat the second in command.
Ah. And how did he feel about the 4th Battalion?
He didn't got much option. I think he got on all right with Max Harrowing.
Mm. Now, I think you were 2IC of a company.
Yes.
Yeah. What was the company actually doing? You say they were in billets. I mean, did you have a sort of normal routine working day?
Oh, yes. We had a routine working day, and I used to turn up with my Sam Brown on over my battle dress, right on that one.
But not ticked off again?
No.
No, just advised.
Advised, dress properly. Right. Well, we did a lot of weapon training and route marches.
How far would you take them if you went on a route march?
About 15 miles. It's difficult, rather, being in the town.
Now, the chaps in your company, were they all TA men, or were they a mixture of TA and conscripts?
Yes.
Did they come mainly from the traditional recruiting areas of the DCLI, or were they from other...
Yes, there was a lot then, not conscripts.
Yes.
Not. That time.
Was the it sounds as though the 4th DCLI was rather more Cornish than the regular battalions.
Oh, well, I'm sure of that, yes. Mm. Well, certainly than the Quarry of Second, that had been.
Yes.
They were Irish and no ideas and so on. Of course, we had two very big exercises which I'll come to. There was Bulldog and Bumper.
Was that while you were at St Albans or later
well,
on?
Well, I was commanding company on one of them.
Yes.
And the other one I had run as a liaison officer to Liverpool District, which is very interesting. Mm. I think I brought that out.
Yes, you mentioned that in your information sheet.
Anyway, they got rid of me because there wasn't much. They thought it was staff training. They could have to help me. So I went off to this huge corps headquarters, which was responsible for all these things there.
Where was it based?
It was a very big banking concern called the Gallery of the Sea, and I think I did in the name something Hall. Something Pelham.
Brent Pelham?
It was in Hertfordshire, I think. Could it be Brent Pelham?
Could be.
Yes. But it was a very nice house, that was the headquarters. We were billeted in cottage houses, and the headquarters in a big house.
What were you doing as a liaison officer?
Well, I was a captain, and I was working on the AQ side. My boss was a Oliver Denny, who became General Minister, whose brother was the famous, was his sister, General.
Oh, Lord Denning.
Lord Denning.
Yes, Master of the Rolls.
Master of the Rolls, that's right.
Yes.
This chap, Richard Denning, was a brigade officer. He was the Bedfordshire Regiment, and he became general. I worked for him. But I used to go about in the car with him, and then he would send me off to various things. Not as well annoyed as I've given a motorbike to ride, which I say good riding. I can't suffer. He's a 1500-weight truck. I didn't appreciate that very much. But I had to get a bike, so I
What sort of things do you send you off to do?
Oh, we wanted to know